Well, folks, you know you're for a treat when you hear that tune, because it's time for another week of the Rec Poker Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Reed, Bluffsterini in the home game and at Rec Poker Jim on Twitter. And I have the best freaking job in the world hanging out here, talking to my friends about poker strategy on the forums edition of the Rec Poker Podcast every Monday night. I got to mention, we are brought to you by the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino. They are the official sponsor of the Rec Poker Podcast. And we're a largely volunteer-based organization. Most of what we do here is free. So we really depend on the support of our sponsors and our premium members who chip in their $15 a month to take advantage of our training materials and our study sessions and all the great stuff that we do here at Rec Poker. Like I say, you can sign up for free. All it takes is an email address and a smile, but I'd love you to come join our premium membership. It only costs $15 a month. And if you use the code RECPOKER at checkout, you can get your first month for only $5. Now, they let me host the show on Monday, so you're probably used to hearing my voice by now, but I am just a small piece of the Rec Poker machine, a little wee baby cog in the machine that is Rec Poker. And we call our leadership panel, the group of people that really make all the magic happen around here, the Wrecking Crew. So if you want to find out more about me and the rest of the Wrecking Crew, go to rec.poker/crew. But you're going to meet a few of them tonight on the air, starting with none other than Kim Kilroy.
Yeah, I'm Kim Kilroy. I'm PetVet or PetVet33 on the forums and social platforms. Fergie56 in the home game. And on the second Wednesday of the month, I run a hand history review. So come on out.
Hi, I'm Mark, and I'm Mr. Bullet on recpoker.com. And I do a monthly office. I do monthly office hours at Rec Poker, which is the first Thursday of each month, where we talk about hands and strategies.
And I'm Rob Washam. You can find me as Rabman50 just about everywhere. And on the first and third Wednesdays of every month, we run a book study where, as a Rec Poker premium member, you can join us and discuss the latest books on poker strategy.
You can see it's just a few of the Wrecking Crew members dipping a toe into the forums edition tonight. We have different study events on almost every single day here at Rec Poker, and it's just a great group of folks that want to help you take your game to the next level and spread our love of poker throughout the poker world. One of the perks of joining our premium membership is that you get to come and join the gang here on the forums edition of the podcast. So I'm happy to introduce Stuart Carriage. Stewie's been a member here for a long time, and always look forward to hearing your voice in the conversation, Stu. Why don't you tell our audience where they can find you in the Rec Poker home games?
I'm Stuart Carriage, and you can find me Stewie13 just about everywhere.
Well, thanks for joining us tonight, Stewie. So we're looking at a post just like we do every week. This is one of the great benefits of joining our free poker learning community here at Rec Poker, are the forums. So you can come and post about a variety of subjects. And every week we take one forum post and talk about it here on the air on the podcast. This is a post by Comaruvis called Top Pair Middling Kicker. And I'll sort of introduce the hand, and then we'll turn it over to the panel of wizards here to talk about some of the decision points. So our correspondent, Comaruvis, I hope I'm saying that right, says, I've recently started playing in a local $60 charity tournament that's put on by a local bar league. This is the Eastern Poker Tour, or the EPT. Most players in this tournaments are the type of players you would expect to find in a bar league, minus the drinking. Two Saturdays ago, I found myself playing this hand. I've been lingering in the tournament most of the night with the occasional small win, but mostly being card dead, when I suddenly got smacked by the deck. In a three-level period, I went from 10 to 11 big blinds to about 150 big blinds. I think we played about 30 hands, and I only folded two hands pre-flop, getting mostly jacks plus. So pretty good couple of orbits for our correspondent here. Says the worst hand I played was king hearts, 10 of hearts from the big blind with four limpers, where one opponent turned a flush, shoved for eight bigs when I had two pair and around 110 big blinds, and then I rivered a boat. It was that kind of run, and I was flying high on the excitement after personally knocking out 12 players to help us get to this point in the tournament. So we have just made the final table. Regular listeners, we were just dealing with a final table hand last week. We're going to talk about another one tonight. This was the first hand of the final table. Blinds were 4K, 8K, with no antes, nine-handed. I was chip leader with about 500,000 in chips, and second place was my left in the small blind with about 150. So that's a pretty significant difference. If we've got about three times the chips of second place, so a very, very big chip lead. The table folds around to me on the button, and I look down at king of hearts, jack of clubs, and raise to 20 bigs, which is 2.5 big blinds. The villain in the small blind raises to 60K, which is three times the raise size. The big blind folds, and it's back to me. Why don't we just stop here for a second and just get a sense from everybody in the group. What are you thinking at this point? You've opened the button, king-jack offsuit. You're facing a three-bet from the small blind, and they are sitting on a little less than 20 big blinds right now. So looking down at king-jack offsuit, Mark, you're the only person who is not muted, so I'll ask you first. What's your sort of default spot decision here when you open king-jack offsuit and get three bet from the small blind when they're coming in with a little fewer than 20 big blinds?
So usually when you're on the button in that spot, I probably open 60%, which is right down to 9-5 suited.
It's a lot. It's a lot of hands. Yeah.
Yes, but yeah, I'm just abusing it.
Of course.
So the small blind should really go after me in or you in that sense. He has 20 big blinds and he three bets to I think 7 or 8, whatever it is. Now like usually what I think about is which hands would play this way? I mean to my mind comes aces and kings.
Right.
queens. And most people do not find the bluffs. Let's just say that.
Mm-hmm.
Because what do you think is a possible bluff?
Right. It's gonna be one of those like blocker hand ace five suited or something like that where
ace five suited.
Sorry, Mark. Yeah.
Ace 5 suited is a sharp preflop.
Oh, I'm sorry. What would be a bluff?
Like in the three bet non-win type of hand. Yes.
Yeah, good question. I mean, I don't see it a lot anyway in the games I'm playing.
If you can't find them, right, how likely is it that this guy is going to find them?
Right. Yeah, good point. And again, like last week, we should consider the context where this is sort of like it's a $60 charity tournament. So these players they might not be bad players, but they're definitely going to be sort of like less experienced, less savvy players than the ones that we're going to be trying to like out fox, you know, on the show more often. I think that's a good point. Here, Rob, do you want to jump in there?
Yeah, I think, you know, what Mark has said is absolutely true. The guy has 20 big blinds. He's in the small blind. And he's three betting the button open. What are you three betting with 20 big blinds when you're out of position? Unless you're three betting a hand that you want somebody to call you with. So the hands that you're three betting there is exactly aces, kings, maybe queens. You just want that guy in a big blind to make a mistake.
Yeah, and Kim, you and Rob both posted in the response here, but I know it takes place. There's more to examine about the hand, or more to reveal about the hand. So I'll just continue reading through the hand here, and then we'll hear from everybody else. So after waiting for a while. We make the call, says our correspondent. And the flop comes king, 10, 6, rainbow. We're holding king, jack offsuit. Villain shoves for his remaining 90K, which is less than what's in the pot. We tank for about a minute, but based upon how I've been running the previous 45 minutes, end up calling. Villain shows ace-ace, and they hold up. So now that we kind of have the action that's available there, Kim, you unmuted. What's on your mind?
Well, I can just say you should never, ever make any move based on how you've been running.
Yes, good point.
You should never make any decision based on that. Before we get into, I mean, I had a whole thing, you can read it or not read it, but yeah, I would say that like that, just that alone is just, you just, that's not what you base your decision on.
Yeah, Kim, you have a really excellent response here that folks can check out if they click on the link. I'll make sure the link to this post is in the show notes. And it starts with, happy tilt is a real thing. Yeah, that's right. And I think that's what you're talking about, where you sort of get this feeling like you can't lose, that you can sort of take some of these negative EV spots and still come out ahead because you're just running so good. You were kind of like destined to suck out on the player or that sort of thing. So that's happy tilt. And it's a thing. It's when we're playing in a way that's not optimal, you know, and we're just doing it because we're used to getting hit with the deck. So Kim, you also kind of mentioned in here that you would probably fold pre-flop because of the strength that the small blind player is demonstrating when they three bet not all in off this stacked up.
Right. So my point was when they bet 60K and leave 90K behind, we have to treat it in our mind like it's an all in.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to decide if our hand would have been strong enough to call an all in.
Yep.
From this player for their entire stack. So is what did our correspondent have again? King Jack offsuit? Is, yes. King Jack offsuit strong enough to call a 20 big blind shove?
Right.
So opinion, it's not.
Right. I like the way you're getting there in the conversation, Kim, because like Mark was saying earlier, if the player doesn't have any bluffs here, then you kind of do have to treat it like an all-in, essentially, because there's not going to be a lot of folding happening post-flop, especially once you do see a flop at that. Mark, did you want to chime in there? I saw you grab the mic.
You know what the three-bet bluff would be? It would be ace-4 offsuit. It would be king-5 suited.
Yeah.
It would be ace-deuce offsuit, like ace-7 offsuit. Like, I just don't see that happening. Like, who pretends like they have aces and just looks down at A7 offsuit and goes to 60,000, leaving 90,000 behind, like basically 11 big blinds behind.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't see it.
So if he doesn't find it, what does he find?
It's just value only. Just the best chance. Yeah. And that's exactly what happened here.
I love what Mark is saying there, because we see a lot of these posts where people are asking for advice on a hand they played. And one of the things that they never talk about is what hands do they think their opponent has.
Hmm.
And we didn't see that from the last one we did last week, and we don't see one here where he's actually putting his opponent on a range of hands that make it worthwhile to do the action that they're proposing to do. So if you can't come up with a hand that makes sense for your action, then you're just pulling a handle and hoping it comes up 3 sevens so you can get a whole bunch of nickels out of the bottom of the slot machine.
And you would know Rob and his wife are like professional slot competition or slot tournament operators down there in the beautiful state of Nevada. So I would listen when Rob starts talking. Okay, so What about on the flop? So let's just say, so I think you guys are bang on when it comes to how to interpret the strength of the hand pre-flop. And, you know, once you do call pre-flop, you flop top pair, you've got third kicker. It's a pretty good board. It's a pretty good flop for King Jack. When they lead into us, I think some players feel like they have to call because they called pre-flop and now they hit a pair. And if they fold now, then they're too exploitable and people can run them over. But at the end of the day, we still just have one pair. Are you guys calling in this spot when it comes around and they lead for less than a pot size bet now and you flop top pair middle kicker? Rob?
I wouldn't be there to begin with, but if I was, I'd be folding.
Right.
You know, I would never be there to begin with. And again, it's the reason that he called is not because he thinks he has the best hand.
Mm-hmm.
The reason he called is because he's saying, even if I don't have the best hand, I've been running so good, I'm going to get there. And that's why he called the bet, which is the worst reason in the world to call a bet. Again, you're just grabbing that handle, pulling it down, and hoping to get the nickels out of the pot.
Yeah, Mark?
Yeah, I have me and another professional player, when we hear something like that, we just like to make fun of it. We just say, flawless logic.
Flawless logic. Yeah, right. Well, and it's not, you know, and I think Komarouvas, I'm going to go with that one, does say himself in the post, like, it was an emotional decision. Like, it wasn't a logical decision. And you're kind of riding this high of having just been being smacked in the face with this deck for so long. It's like, it's a common problem we have. And I like that everyone here on the panel is just checking this player and being like, that's true and it's great, but you know, you really have to fight that tilt because it is tilt. It's a problem with, you know, how you're making the decision here, because you're letting these non-logical factors come in and affect it. And you do end up gambling. Like Rob says, you are kind of pulling the trigger or pulling the lever. I guess that's true. And I just want to point out, this goes to speak to why you can't call this preflop. You're not going to get many boards better than top pair for a lot of these Broadway hands. I mean, everyone can hope to hit two pair plus, but one pair is like among the better outcomes that you're going to get. And so if you're going to fold on a one pair hand because your opponent hasn't capped the range, and I mean, there's a lot of good reasons why you would, then again, that's just another reason not to make the call preflop, because you're really just setting yourself up for a situation where way more often than would make it worth it, you're just going to end up folding anyway. You know, even if you improve to a strong hand as top pair. So the final thought from Komarouvas in here says, I've gone through this in my head, discussed it with friends. I feel like the only place I really could have gotten away from this hand was to the initial raise preflop. I think he means the three bet preflop. I feel this way just from the stack size that I had, where after this hand, I was still chip leader. But it started a downward spiral, and I ended up bubbling in sixth place, where a couple of times I ended up getting coolered, like losing ace-king to a set of nines and stuff like that, which does just happen. But did my mentality of I can't miss affect my judgment on the preflop action, and should it have been a red flag to see villain shove on the flop, meaning I should have paid more attention to his possibility to have ace-king, kings, tens, or even aces? And I think the answer is yes. I think the answer is yeah, that's exactly right. And so kudos to Komarouvas for posting this, because it's very easy for us to post hands where we played well and we won a big pot, or we put a bluff and we, you know, get to show off to our forum readers what a great player we are. But it's the hands like this where you feel something telling you like you make a strategic error, and sharing that with the world and making yourself vulnerable to other players to weigh in on, you know, how they would play it, like the group has done it here. I think that's a great way to improve as a player and to kind of find these spots where, you know, get some feedback from the rest of the group and find out, you know, is this one of those spots where it's affecting your judgment, or is it just a bad beat? Because it's hard for us to tell playing in isolation by ourselves to know when it's a bad beat or a bad decision. So my hat's off to our correspondent here. Rob?
I was just going to say, one of the comments I made was, every hand you're dealt is a brand new scenario.
Mm-hmm.
The things that happened in the past have no bearing on what's happening now, other than the reads that you have on the players and how you determine what their ranges are constructed of. That's the only thing that changes from the previous hands that you've played. So just because you're running like God doesn't mean you're going to continue to run like God. And every hand is a brand new hand.
Yeah, I love it. Well, I think that's great advice and probably a good place to leave it here, unless anyone else has anything to add. I want to, again, thank our correspondent there. This was a good post by Comaruvis or Comaruvis or whatever their name is. So thank you for posting. I hope you continue to share your hands in the Rec Poker forums here. So thank you to our correspondent. Thank you to Rob Washam, Kim Kilroy, Mark Zhang, and Stuart Carriage. Thanks to the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino. And you, our loyal listeners. We wouldn't do it without you. So thanks for your support, and we'll see you again sometime real soon on the Rec Poker Podcast. Good night, everybody.